Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 276 of the Roguecast, recorded October 5th, 2019, The Shriveled Heart of C.G. Alfred. Gentlemen, it's November.
Yeah, I can tell because it's been cold off and on.
I know, I don't like it. But it's warm this week, and so I'm happy.
Yeah, it's actually, I was back to wearing shorts again.
Oh.
I don't need no pants. Try and make me.
I just wanted to stay cold. I really do. I hate this fluctuation.
I just want to stay warm. I agree. I hate the fluctuation.
I am the ultimate neutral party on this because I can enjoy it warm or moderate like we've been getting. I kind of like it when it's the neutral state, and I'm going to like it when it gets cold in a day or two.
All right, take a stand, why don't you?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I really just like paying less for my electric bill. Is that a thing?
I have solar panels.
Don't you have to throw on the heat at some point?
That's a gas bill. He likes paying.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
Nick enjoys the gas bill.
Yes. It's always under, like, $250.
It's a weird start to the podcast. Weird start to the podcast. Did people think they were going to tune into us paying our gas bills? Man, I'm sorry.
I think if people were taking bets, that would not be even on the board.
All I said was, it's November. You guys are responsible for the rest of that.
No, somebody might have had a bet on that, Nick, and he just won big.
I mean, if they did, congratulations.
He owes us.
300-1 odds in Vegas.
Yeah.
They bet on everything in Vegas. They might bet on the roadcast.
They're going to get around to utilities eventually. Yeah. But look, y'all, we read some comics and I'm sure watched some movies and other things too.
Yes, it's true. Yes. We all watched Watchmen. Depending on how long we have to record, we might talk about that again because I think we're all really digging it.
Yes. It's been the subject of far too many conversations in my life lately, in a good way, but also in an insane way.
Well, in fact, we spent about 30 minutes today doing it, which is why the podcast is running late.
I mean, 30 minutes when you were here.
When you were here. We had talked about it like an hour. So, yes, it is, if nothing else, it is very discussable.
Yep. So, let's talk about the news.
We had a few things this week, right?
Yeah, there are a few things. There's a Game of Thrones prequel. Last week there was an announcement that one of them was not going forward. I guess probably there were like two competing projects.
Right.
One of them got shut down.
The one that was the comic tie-in, I think, got shut down. The one about Egg and...
Oh, that's too bad. That's the one I wanted.
Yeah, no, I think they're doing the one about the Targaryens.
Yeah, it's called House of the Dragon. It's about the Targaryens. Which, yeah. You know, that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, the stuff that they covered in, what do they call that series? Hedge Knight. The Hedge Knight short story, or like, yeah, I think they're like novellas or short stories, and then they've been adapted into graphic novels, are really good.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I think they would all make interesting stories.
It's basically, what's the Joust movie we all liked?
Knight's Tale.
Knight's Tale, but it's set in the Game of Thrones era.
Yeah, it is actually the first one is a serious take on Knight's Tale. Literally a squire impersonates his lord or whatever after he dies, mm-hmm. and there's a tournament coming up. Only imagine that going in the most Game of Thrones way possible.
Right.
But it's like really interesting what happens. There's all these like interesting politics, and there's a girl, and there's a puppet show, and all this interesting stuff that happens.
Yeah,
it is a great little story. Very very much George Martin on his A game.
But there
are
no dragons.
There are no dragons
but
in
there's
it.
There's a Targaryen.
Yeah.
But
so
this House of the whatever.
How far back is it? Do we know how far back it goes?
We don't know how far back it goes. I actually have not looked up any of the info. I just saw that it was happening.
That's one that's got to go.
Well, this is the one that's based off of his books, right? Like the
the ones the histories he's been writing.
Yeah, the history he's been writing.
Yeah, they're like not novels so much as like histories.
Yeah,
it's weird. Did he basically take his notes and publish them?
Yeah,
is that what I'm led to believe?
He was like, "I'm never going to finish the book. I might as well publish these notes I spent much time on."
You know, like in the end, they dredged up everything Tolkien ever sketched, or like every note on linguistics he ever had.
So it is 300 years before the events of Game of Thrones.
Huh.
It is a 10 episode order. It's Miguel Sapochnik was one of the big Game of Thrones directors. He's one of the showrunners. He's going to direct the pilot. Sapochnik directed Hard Home, Battle of the Bastards, and Winds of Winter. So those are all pretty good episodes.
Yeah.
One of the other co-creators.
You know, when that shows up, are people going to be like, will there be so much residual burnout that they're like not even interested?
I think it's possible. I also think that
Trailer can turn a lot around.
Some people are going to jump onto this because like it's not Benioff and Weiss who everyone has decided they hate it and we're terrible.
Right. Do you think they'll be more interested?
I think they'll be more interested. They'll be like, yeah, this is like when George Lucas was not on Star Wars anymore, and it's like, well, now we can finally get some Star Wars that's not crap.
Yeah, except arguably Benioff and Weiss. I don't think anybody can say that they had as big a fall as the prequels.
No, they can't. Some people would.
Right, but those people are deluding themselves. Yes. We know it. What were you saying, Nick?
No, nothing. I was just saying the world collectively kicked Benioff and Weiss off the island, essentially.
Yes,
yeah.
Like, you're canceled, Benioff and Weiss.
You can't have Star Wars. You can't make your Confederate show, which is probably a good thing.
That one was probably a good one.
That was a very good thing.
Who knows? So it looks like they're going to end doing a remake of Howard the Duck.
I wouldn't be shocked to see them go to Marvel, actually.
Remake of Problem Child. That's what I'm going to put my money on. Long shot.
Yeah, they're like, the later era John Hughes are of much interest to us.
Speaking of HBO, sort of, there's also a Green Lantern TV series in development with Greg Berlanti at the helm.
For HBO Max. Max.
Now, HBO Max, I found out this week, if you have HBO Go or HBO Now, you will get HBO Max for free.
Yeah, if you pay for HBO in some fashion right now, you get it.
That's good. That means that, like, if you get, you're going to get, weirdly, like, Friends and some of that stuff is going to come through HBO Max.
Oh, weird.
I get HBO. I'm happy about this. Yeah. I will get access to all the DC stuff. I'm probably going to cancel my DC subscription.
Yeah, of course. You cancel before they cancel it, because they're going to.
Yeah.
So, they're going to be doing Green Lantern. It will not be part of the CW shared universe.
Right.
Presumably.
Which is
But also means that they will probably have a bit more of a budget, and might be able to do kind of, well, obviously they're going to be wanting to do, and maybe can pull off what the movie couldn't.
Actually, they're just going to reuse all the CGI from Game of Thrones. So we're going to make a lot of green dragons, green white walkers.
Yes. Greg Berlanti had nothing to do with the movie, right?
No.
Is he not involved at all?
I don't
all?
Think he was.
No. Okay, I was just...
He's the guy who's show running?
Yeah, well, he's maybe not show running, but developing.
Okay. Yeah. I like Green Lantern.
I feel like
Green Lantern. Like an HBO budget and show.
If you told me that this was a Guy Gardner helm show, I'd be all about it.
We don't know.
Hal Jordan is kind of boring.
But I could absolutely see. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they made like Jon Stewart maybe the Lantern.
I would like that.
If they do the show, I'm sure they'll do an ensemble. Why wouldn't they?
I think they absolutely should. But I wonder, will they, you know, are they going to, like, begin? Would they begin with it already in action, and they're like, it's on Oa and all that stuff, or MOGO? Or are they going to retell an origin?
I don't know. I bet they'll find a half-measure thing. They'll do flashbacks like they did with Batwoman.
You know what would be interesting? If, say, like, Kyle Rayner's your entry point character.
Yeah.
He gets recruited. Hal is, like, the sergeant.
Hal and John and the Oz guys
have
been there for a while.
You know, essentially, like, and weirdly, like, if you go by a Gotham style... Harvey Bullock would be Guy Gardner, you know, the kind of tough cop who bends the rules and stuff like that. I could kind of see that. I think that's almost what I'd like to see, because I don't want to see an origin.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to see what they do with the budget, how they choose to do the constructs, whether they're kind of going with... Because it's hard to do that and not be a little bit comedic about it.
Yeah.
You know, are they going to get weird? Are, like, you know, are aliens going to create more strange alien ships? Or are they going to, like, or, like, constructs? Or is it going to be pretty kind of classic superhero-y in a lot of ways?
Knowing Berlanti, I would guess classic superhero-y, but...
Probably so.
Given Legends of the DC Universe, it could be weird.
Legends of the DC Universe?
Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow. Is that what he...
He's one of the guys involved in that.
He's done all of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Y'all generally excited for, or?
Excited's a strong word, but interested.
Yeah.
I will watch it.
Okay.
I'm with Nick. I will watch this.
We've been a little bit hurt by Green Lanterns before, and it'd be nice to see, but I think we would all say that we like Green Lantern as a concept.
Yep.
We'd like to see it done well.
Yeah.
This is a better shot than it's probably had in a while, and maybe a better idea than a movie, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
So, you know, good luck, Green Lantern.
You know, it feels like the kind of thing would work as a movie. Like, it feels like, had that worked, they could have built the DC Extended Universe around Green Lantern.
Absolutely.
But it didn't work.
Yep. They just needed better writing and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's what DC's needed for a while.
Yep.
And will continue to. Speaking of DC, the Batman movie continues to get a bunch of casting news.
Yes.
Some of it really interesting, some of it very weird, some a little both. So what we get with most recent, Jeffrey Wright has been confirmed as Commissioner Gordon.
I like that.
Jeffrey Wright.
It's good.
Matthew McConaughey as Two-Face. It's a little weird.
A little weird, but I could see it. He's a great actor. We know he's really talented.
And Andy Serkis as Alfred, which is bizarre.
That is a little odd. Just off the top of your head, do y'all know, like, how old Andy Serkis is?
I think he's 50.
Not older. I would say like 40 something.
Okay, that's not that crazy, because like Bruce in it is going to be what, late 20s or whatever Pattinson is.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, you know, for some reason I thought he was older than
what
that.
What were the guesses? What did I guess?
You said
mid 40s.
I said 50.
I'm gonna say 56.
He is 55 years old.
Huh? Okay. Booyah!
Yep. But Dave, by Price is Right rules, I win.
There is nothing that governs the modern America more than Price is Right.
It's true.
So, fair enough.
Yeah.
Can we get the bad sound effect?
Yes. I win nothing, by the way. There's no prizes. So Andy Serkis is offered. I just like, I don't know. I guess 55 is the right age, but is he British?
Yes.
Yeah, he is.
He is, actually.
I think that could work out. He's a little, it feels a little stunt casty.
I thought he was like a New Zealander.
Maybe so.
I mean, if that's the case, why don't you just go ahead and cast Jermaine Clement as as anything, really, in the Batman universe?
Right. As he can be the Riddler. Dryly humorous Kiwi there.
Yeah.
Those are mostly fairly interesting casting choices. I don't think I could be enthused for this movie until I see a trailer that kind of wins me over. But in the same sense, there's not many. If they were to pitch almost anybody new in a Batman movie, I don't think I'd be excited.
Also, like, you're remaking Batman Forever because you're using Riddler and Two-Face?
Yes, that's true. Riddler isn't actually in this. I just made that up.
Well, no, isn't he?
No, somebody is.
Yeah, they cast.
Oh, you're right. They did.
Yeah. I wasn't weird. Joking. I'm like,
did they set out a challenge for themselves? They're like, let's take one of the campiest movies of all time. The only campier one is Batman and Robin.
Yep.
And let's see what we can do with it.
Interesting.
I hadn't quite realized that. They are not gonna follow in those footsteps. We are a long way from 1995.
But I'm just like, that feels a little bloated for basically your flagship
Batman book.
Batman.
Well, you know, the Marvel movies have gotten much better about figuring out villain balance.
The DC ones haven't, though. They should really learn to walk before they try and fly.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah. Unless they're going to do
the
like
director.
It's Matt something.
Matt Reeves. Yeah.
And he's done.
I'm blanking on.
I don't know, Nick. I was looking to you. I hope you would know.
No, I don't. Okay. Off the top of my head.
So let me just, while Nick looks this up, let me posit a thought for you.
All right, hit it.
Andy Serkis is well known for playing CGI enhanced characters.
Yes.
What if Alfred is a talking gorilla? Better or worse?
A little DC Silver Age throwback.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids love gorillas.
I'm just saying, talking gorilla butler, that would get me to see this new Batman movie. I'm not sure otherwise, but I would be Julius Schwartz's dream. I would go see it because of the talking
gorilla.
Could
he reprise his role as Gollum?
Interesting. He could be like a Gollum-like creature.
Yeah.
He could be a computer, a robot of some kind. The Offer 2000.
So I'm going to start out with his first film.
Okay. Matt Reeves?
Well, maybe not first film, but The Pallbearer with David Schwimmer and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yes.
But more recently, he did the all the Planet of the Apes ones.
Oh, that's right. Those were pretty good.
Yeah.
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 So, he did all the Planet of the Apes movies. That brings my
and
Alfred
Cloverfield.
And Monsters. So that brings my Alfred as some kind of gorilla theory a lot more prominence.
Yeah, well, that was a really good call, Randy.
Yeah. Anyway, you heard it here first.
Did he do 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Oh, really?
If he did, then that's a reason for me to pay attention. Because of the various Cloverfield properties, that's the only one I really, really
that's
like.
That's a good one, yeah.
No, he did not. That was Dan Trek.
Boo!
But
hope he gets in a car wreck.
But he's definitely going to have a gorilla Alfred. I think you can say that for sure.
Yeah, if people want to go ahead and put their money on that one, I think it's pretty safe to say.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2 has been announced.
Yeah, that was pretty big. I like saw all my friends freaking out because y'all all like that movie.
Yeah, well, it's because it's great, and anyone who doesn't love it has a shriveled little heart inside them.
The shriveled heart of CG Alfred.
Yes, the shriveled heart of CG Alfred.
I liked it. I would say, in spite of its kind of larger than life humor and the fact that there was a spider pig in it, it is very well made.
It just means we're gonna get more Nicolas Cage Spider-Man noir.
Yeah,
maybe, we don't know.
There's no way that they don't give you something of that.
I loved it. I'm the only disappointment I have in this is that it's 2022, and that's a long time to wait.
Yeah, they got to go draw a lot of pictures.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we're gonna have Disney Plus. We're gonna have all the Marvel movies.
I know, but I want it now, Nick.
Yeah, but that's
Martin Scorsese says you can't have it.
Yeah, what does Martin Scorsese think of the Spider-Verse? He should write another editorial about
it. You know that part where Joe Pesci gets mad at the guy in the bar in Goodfellas?
Yeah.
That's what he thinks about it, Randy. He's sorry he got blood on your floor.
I'm probably not going to watch The Irishman. I'm just going to say it. I really have no desire.
Well, it's good.
But is that because of the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm tired of like Martin Scorsese and all the other people.
Don't you think that mostly came about, though, because they just asked him about it? And he said something that was a little bit yeah, surprising. But
why couldn't he just been like, yeah, I didn't watch it?
Because why lie? When you're 70 or whatever he is,
I don't think it's a lie. I don't think he's watched it.
He said he's tried some of them.
I wasn't all that upset about him saying, what do I care if Martin Scorsese likes the Avengers or not? How does that impact my life at all? But then he took time to write an editorial in the New York Times to explain himself and basically just said all the same shit again. And I'm like, what was the point of that?
No, he didn't. He said his rationale was that he feels that the indie movies are getting squeezed out by mega franchises. That's a reasonable rationale. You don't have to agree with it, but it's somewhat reasonable.
Yeah.
It's a thought process.
Yeah,
I think he's just started a snowball of all other actors who are annoyed, and
maybe those people needed a voice.
No, they didn't. Here's the thing:
Jennifer Aniston did not need a voice. She just joined Twitter and got 7 million people following
whatever Martin Scorsese thinks of the Avengers. He still did Goodfellas, which I love. I know, Nick, you're not as big of a fan.
No. Yeah.
Which is weird to me.
I actually don't really think I like any of his movies.
So, of course, you're not going to watch The Irishman.
This wasn't a big sacrifice.
No, here's the thing. I've watched most of his movies. I don't like
movies. Yeah, what's funny is that Nick has probably seen more Scorsese movies than I have.
Yeah, me too. But I really love Goodfellas. I really like Wolf of Wall Street.
That's my favorite of his movies.
I guess those are the two. But Irishman looks to be in the vein. I'm going to at least give it a watch at some point.
I'm probably going to wait to see what people say about it. Martin Scorsese has three or four movies that I think are great, and it's like Taxi Driver, Goodfellas, Cape Fear, actually.
No, yeah, Cape Fear's really good.
Some of his bigger ones, for whatever reason, Raging Bull never resonated much with me, and a few of the other ones. I'm actually watching Mean Streets currently, and it's pretty interesting, but not blowing me away.
Well, just wait till you see his Ambush Punk movie coming in 2025.
Hey, you know, with the Joker movie roughly based on King of Comedy and Taxi Driver.
Wasn't he a producer on that?
At one point. Then his partner took over.
He realized there's another stupid superhero
stupid
movie. Whoops. My bad. And then he drove off in a gangster car in a song by the Ronettes played. By the way, although he does that in Goodfellas in 87 or... Yeah. No, that was 1990.
Yeah.
I started watching Mean Streets, which was 1975 or something like that. He's actually using those techniques in there. It has Goodfellas filming techniques.
Yeah.
It's also a little bit more street view, but anyway. I'd be a smart ass.
I'd rather watch any Marvel movie over The Departed again.
Even Iron Man 2?
Even Iron Man 2.
That's all crazy.
Over The Departed? The Departed's crap.
The Departed's not a bad movie. But, I mean, just because I agree with you and I'd want to watch Iron
it's
Man
probably
3,
got some better scenes in it, though, than Iron Man.
I mean, I know I'd watch Thor the Dark World over Departed, because I have. I own both those movies, and I haven't seen The Departed in years.
Did you hold them up in your hands and weigh them like a serious, measured thing?
Yeah, who's the Egyptian guy?
What's that movie site that we...
Yeah.
The movie...
Flick Chart.
I think I would probably make... I would choose Thor Dark World.
Flick Chart came up.
We have to quick say to people out there what Flick Chart is, and if you want to go waste a few hours doing this, because it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's a site that ranks what your movies you like, but all you do is it'll flash two movies on the screen, or the posters for them.
Yep.
It'll be Jaws and Problem Child, and you just pick which of the two you like better, and it starts formulating a list.
Or which of the two you would watch right now.
Yeah, whatever your standard is. But you pick one of the two, and then it starts building a list, and after a while, it'll match up some of those old movies against newer ones you're picking, so it keeps the list freshly populated and changing. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, and after a while, you'd be very embarrassed to find out what your film taste is.
Right, and the craziest thing comes up. You know, it'll be it's The Music Man versus Cannibal Holocaust. And you're like, oh, they're so different, but I love them both. Anyway.
But which one would I rather watch?
Anyway, I guess the point is, I might or might not see The Irishman.
I mean, it's free on Netflix. I think it hits in like one.
Yeah, but
week?
So is The Laundromat, which is Steven Soderbergh, which I haven't watched. And yeah. So is My Name is Dolomite, which I haven't watched. I don't have time. It's not money, it's time I'm short on. I'm yeah. short on money too.
I mean, you also are, you can go see movies in theaters for free. Well, not free, but, you know, anytime.
$20 a month. It's a huge sacrifice.
All right, before people get caught up in our movie-watching habits, which I'm sure is real enthralling to them, let's move on to what else there is in the news.
What, you don't want to talk about the weather again? let's talk instead about Ant-Man 3, which is in development.
Yeah.
Which I know Dave was super excited about.
Was Ant-Man, I super excited about
Ant-Man
that?
Isn't Ant-Man, like, your favorite Marvel movie?
Yeah.
I mean, that's as excited as he gets about the Marvel movies. Like, yes. Yeah.
Dave is as excited about this as Martin Scorsese is about it.
Yeah, I like when it comes out, I will see it in the theater, and I am for sure going to enjoy it. But, yeah, I'm not like, I don't really get excited for the Marvel movies.
You're as excited about it as Nick and I are for Green Lantern.
Yes.
Well, I mean,
I will
is,
watch it.
This is exciting because they didn't know they were going to get a third one.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah. Right, yeah, I remember when these announcements hit, they're... Announcements hit. There was a few. I mean, that was kind of unexpected. I didn't know that was going
to
happen.
And Peyton Reed is coming back to direct it.
He directed both.
Yeah,
one.
He's directed both.
Okay.
And all the cast are coming back. I saw that Michael Douglas tweeted that filming starts like next year.
Nice.
So
wow. So when are they going to put that out? I mean, there's that schedule they put out may not be accurate. Like maybe just like the previous ones they've done.
Yeah,
say,
it's organic.
Here's what we're thinking about, but we're going to add some other stuff. That's cool. Yeah. There's also the rumors going around that Avengers 5 is going to happen. It's going to be a different movie. But I believe those rumors are completely created by those dumb sites.
There's two trash sites out there right now
those
that are
sites
just
that shall not
that
be
just,
named.
That just make stuff up. Yeah, I would not give them. I would not name them.
No.
Yeah, but if you've occasionally been finding rumors online that you're like, "Wow, what a scoop!" and then nobody says anything about it for months,
because
and it turns
it
out it's not happening, it's because they made it up, and those guys are trash.
To get clicks, and they're trash. finally. Al Pacino is going to play a Nazi hunter on Amazon Prime.
Right.
I meant to watch this trailer.
There's not much, but it's just a little teaser. It's just like him saying something about Nazis are bad.
Okay.
I don't think it was quite how he said. He said that he's like, he called it, I don't actually know, like in Yiddish, like it's, he called it a mitzvah.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Like obviously there's a bar mitzvah and okay, okay, that's interesting.
Because this is the Jordan Peele
produced.
But
this was like a serious ass looking thing.
Yeah.
And about like sort of like I'm sure following somewhat the notion of Simon Wiesenthal's sort of Nazi hunting stuff in the what 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And what I didn't know if this was based on a historical incident or kind of or whether it was just broad historical fiction about the idea of
if
the
I'm
Nazi
believing
hunters.
What my brain is telling me that is like remembering something I read.
More than
I believe it
else.
Is based on what you're talking about.
If I believe what my brain is telling me, he is going to be played by a gorilla as well.
do you mean to say that it's based on a historical
yes,
thing?
Yes, it's based on a historical.
Okay,
thing.
Not just a general era.
It's based on a historical gorilla, not Nazis.
Voiced by Al Pacino.
Voiced by Al Pacino.
You know,
die, Nazi, die.
Al Pacino is not a young man.
He's not.
But
they're gonna de-age him. It's fine.
Oh, are they?
I have no idea.
I mean, they for sure can now.
Yeah.
But also, I think in every picture I want to say I ever saw Simon Wiesenthal, I think he always looked like an old man.
Yeah.
So, if he's kind of the inspiration for, or if there's a specific person he's playing who just was an old guy when he was doing it. Could well be.
We could use some younger Nazi hunters.
I hope there's a whole generation of them being raised right now.
Can we have Brad Pitt's character from Inglourious Basterds come back somehow?
We should for sure. He needs to rally a nation.
Yeah, yeah.
Richard Spencer ain't been punched enough.
God, I almost want to make that the title. But I won't.
Al Pacino needs a shot.
Everyone gets to punch Richard Spencer.
Everyone gets one.
That's the new Constitution. It's part one of the Constitution. Everyone gets to punch Richard Spencer.
Turns out 22 was about the limit.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics week of Wednesday, November 6th, and it's a good week.
Yes, it is. It's a wide variety of good books this week.
It is.
That's the first week. I usually launch a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It was weird. The fifth week was good, though. So
it was.
All right. Nick, why don't you give us the latest update on the X-Books, since we know you're picking one of the X-Books.
I am. There are two this week. I think we're going to get two for the next couple of weeks as they catch up.
Just cranking them out.
Yeah.
Not a care in the world.
So, yeah, two books came out this week. So, we have New Mutants number one and X-Force number one.
Which one's your pick?
My pick is X-Force number one, which I was actually surprised that I liked as much as I did. I think outright it's... a lot has to do with the artwork. The artwork by... who is this? I think Juan Carras or... I don't know. But it is beautiful. It almost looks like a David Finch, but a little bit more stylized.
Yeah, those dark, the heavy dark areas remind me a little bit of Mike Deodato.
Joshua Cassara.
Yeah, but he has Liam Sharp, too.
Yeah, that from like his previous Wonder Woman
run.
Who
drew the, I can't remember if you just said this, you might have just said it, who drew the boys?
Derek Robertson.
Derek Robertson in there, maybe. It's kind of got a gritty look, and just to real quick ask the premise for me, is this the villain's book?
No, this is basically the spy book.
Dave, they're all the villains' books.
I mean, that's
all
true.
The heroes' books.
That's true, because they did give amnesty to all the villains in this.
But this is sort of about intelligence gathering and new threats on the horizon. So this is a weird team that features, like, Beast.
And they're not just, like, on Krakoa, like, we're out of coconuts and stuff.
No, it's...
They're actually called Krakonuts.
Yeah, Krakonuts, what are you talking about? I mean, in New Mutants, we find out that they're growing a certain kind of coffee, so, you know, that people are loving. But no, this is a book that features Beast, Wolverine, Jean Grey, Sage, Domino, Quentin Quire... who does not appear in this issue.
Okay.
And weirdly, Black Tom Cassidy.
Okay, they are all planners of some sort. Black Tom Cassidy is like an evil schemer, but like everybody else is like, you know, either a person who's done spy stuff, like wet work type stuff, or a person who's kind of a little bit of a thinker like Beast. So is this them kind of trying to get out ahead of threats, be a little proactive?
A little bit. It opens up with a kind of a meeting of, let's just say racists. I mean, it's a big giant room of racists.
Yep.
Who are basically about the pure human gene over the X gene, and Domino is sort of infiltrating them. These guys have a lot in common.
Yeah, I think I saw this opening. Aren't they like doing a blood test, like in the movie The Thing?
Yeah, it's what
to like.
Think
they're
too.
Like, we need to make sure there's no muties among us.
Right. They kind of feel like marauders, like the old school marauders.
Not the fun new pirate marauders.
Not the fun new pirate marauders. The old, let's string them up on a giant X and crucify them.
Right. Yeah, the old marauders were like pretty creepy dudes.
They were. But it's also sort of about Krakoa and what actually, like, that the island is actually like the... biology of it, and because you have people like Beast, and
I know Hickman was having some fun with the kind of like, I mean, just the notion that Krakoa produces these like seeds that form portals that are like will like grow in like rough weather and all whatever the various.
But there's
ones
some like
they
weird wildlife popping up that is behaving differently than they expect, and also
this is a little bit like if they had made the Savage Land their home base. Like he's clearly like it looks like. They're gonna like play around with the setting more than I expected.
Yep. And it's actually pretty cool. And but also dealing with what Black Tom is doing. He is basically connected with the island.
That's such a strange thing.
What
did he have? Psionic powers or something? Like he could blast through his like cane or something, right?
A shillelagh.
Yeah. For people who don't know, Black Tom Cassidy was the brains behind the Brawn, who worked with the Juggernaut.
Yes, and he's also Banshee's brother.
Yeah, he's like the evil brother, and yeah, he usually is like Juggernaut. Go steal this for me.
Yeah, but he's definitely sort of weirdly the eyes and ears of the island, which is.
It is not a role I know of him, unless that's like there were some stories I don't remember where he had weird mystical connections.
Yeah, some of the X-Men are acting a little strangely, and I'm sure that will be addressed at some point. But I think it was sort of the subtle things in here that I liked the most. It was the character interaction, the art. There are some cool action sequences. There's an infiltration of Krakoa from a group of individuals that is... pretty awesome, but this book is also very, very dark.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And has a kind of shocking ending. We'll see where it goes. But
that sounds more interesting than I expected. I may check it out. I have not looked at that one yet.
Yeah, I don't want to reveal too much, but like I said, there's some cool character moments. I like the Beast, who we haven't seen, gets a little bit more time.
I got a question. Mm-hmm. Jean Grey, is she going by Marvel Girl?
She's just been referred to as Jean at this point.
Well, they're calling her Gray.
They've been doing that for a while, I guess. Did they say yet? I know there's supposed to be some reason she's in the Marvel Girl costume. Do we know?
We have not.
Like the costume. I just don't know why they're doing it.
She's like, I just thought it was neat.
She's like, people need more masks with points on them.
Oh, and I forgot, Colossus is in here as well.
He's not a big thinker.
No, but he's good. He's a nice guy.
I guess so. is he going to paint their portrait?
That'd be cool if he did, but I don't think so. Dave, what did you pick?
My pick is a unexpected Marvel one. This was a book that I liked when it kicked off, but I had kind of dropped off because it was a little too silly for me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Ongoing Black Cat series by... who that writer? Jed McKay. Yeah. So she, the first few books have, like, established that she had has her own crew, and I liked who they were. She pulls a couple, like, kind of big heists that are sort of high-profile Marvel Universe character stuff, like a heist into Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum or into the Baxter Building, which is that the actual Baxter Building or
something? It is the Baxter Building again,
okay.
I think.
Yes. Okay. And, but this episode is a sort of break issue. It's one of those ones you can come in even if you hadn't been reading it. It's a sort of standalone, even though it's also setting up something. There's kind of an A plot and a B plot. And the A plot is a date for Black Cat. And the date is an unusual one. of course, Black Cat famously dated Spider-Man. In this one, she's dating someone who's a little bit more of a peer, a villain, a mercenary. A mercenary known as Batroc the Leaper, a.k.a. Batroc. Usually written as kind of like a... these days... Well, I guess there's two speeds. Randy, you pointed out earlier when Ed Brubaker used him in, like, his Winter Soldier era.
He was basically a mercenary who spoke only untranslated French and was basically a cipher. Like,
right.
He's there to
He's just a badass mercenary.
Yeah, yep.
Probably a little bit closer to how he briefly appeared in Cap Civil
War. Winter Soldier,
yeah, in the movies.
Yep.
But a lot of times when people do him, they kind of do tongue-in-cheek versions where he's... Because, you know, like in the... He was like a guy who had an outrageous French accent back in the day.
Yep.
And he fought the French... He used the French savate as his primary form of fighting. He was a Captain America enemy. And he you know, because he was a larger-than-life villain back in the day, most of the people writing him now kind of feel like they got to be a little bit meta or camp him up.
Yep.
Well, here they kind of go the opposite. It's somewhat unexpectedly for a book that has a pretty decent sense of humor, I'd say. Which is to say, he is played mostly straight, a little larger than life, but he, like, shows up in a suit, and they have a dinner, and they talk shop.
They talk about being villains.
They talk about being villains, yeah.
It is, I mean, it's not fun. It's a lot of fun.
Right.
But it's not goofy.
Right, he is not played as a joke. He's played seriously, but they themselves have a kind of witty and fun conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know, I kind of like how they're both a little bit realistic about the things.
Yep.
They're like, well, we're none of us are like looking for long-term love. But they also, what was it? They were, what is the thing where Captain America comes up, Randy?
She's talking about...
She's talking about her, like, first...
How she got involved with Spider-Man, and she asks him if he's ever been romantically involved with anybody.
He says, I know full well the allure of the hero sticking in your mind, never far from your thoughts. And she's like, oh yeah, Dish. And he's like, well, Mon Capitaine, of course, Steven Rogers.
Yeah.
And she's a little, like, slightly thrown. She's like, good Lord, Batroc, you're the most French person I've ever met. Yeah, he, like, what is it he says as far as, like, his draw to Captain America?
Yeah.
He almost talks about...
Being in a fight is one of those intimate things. It's not like he has an attraction of Captain America.
Yeah, and I was like, that is a very, like, both very Batroc, but it's a more sophisticated take on him than you usually get.
Yeah.
It's not played just as a joke.
And this intercuts, by the way, with with Black Fox being chased down by ninjas.
Big, cool action sequence with Black Fox, on the run from some pretty dangerous foes. It's setting up what's going to happen. Clearly, that'll be the sort of... that. B plot will become the A plot, I think, in the next issue.
This book is so much fun. I've been really enjoying it. I'm gonna be really sad when it gets canceled after issue 12 of the latest.
Yeah, well, that is what's gonna happen. Just like that cool She-Hulk comic that Charles Soule wrote.
Just like Domino.
Yeah, it's sad that like there are books that come out, and I understand why people like don't dig them, and you know why so not everything is gonna take.
Nope.
But it's especially sad when the ones that feel more inspired are just as much a lost cause as anything else.
Well,
that's not like another Spider-Man or Wolverine
comic. The funny thing is, when they were doing a Black Cat book, none of us were like, oh, this is going to be the one. This is going to go 30 issues. Like, Marvel knows when they put a Black Cat book out that it's going to go maybe 6 or 12 issues.
Right.
And that's just the way the market is. Like, the odds of the Black Cat book being, like, becoming the thing are really... I mean, it's not surprising at all, and I understand it, but it's a shame that people don't try out these sort of third-tier books. And I think because they are so often canceled, people stop trying them. It's a weird catch-22.
Yeah. That said, I know among our customers that it's gotten a pretty good shot. There's a decent number of people who tried it out. But if you're not sure about it, or if you want to just try out a random issue and just see the writer doing a kind of a fun date scene issue... This is a good one to check in on. It's Black Hat number 6.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like if I had the wherewithal to do a like best single issue of the year kind of award,
yeah,
it'd be up in the running.
It's a candidate.
Yeah.
All right, Randy, speaking of candidates, what do you got?
All right. So I'm picking Undiscovered Country number 1. This is Scott Snyder and Charles Soule along with Giuseppe Camuncoli and Daniel Orlandini. It is a science fiction story wherein the United States walled itself off about 8 years ago and just basically put up this crazy, like, air force field so nobody can get in. And the world outside has turned into sort of a pan-Asian nation and a European nation that have been sort of at a Cold War. And there's some kind of plague that comes from the sky that is maybe ravaging places. And a call goes out from someone inside America saying, hey, we've got a cure, send a team in, and we will give you the cure. So they gather up this team, they send them in, and America's gotten weird.
Huh.
There is, like, crazy Road Warrior meets...
I was going to say, it felt to me like DMZ meets Road Warrior.
Yeah, except Road Warrior doesn't quite... Like, the guy who is, the head of this this militia that meets the team after their helicopter crash is a 7-foot-tall guy wrapped in bandages like a mummy riding a carnivorous buffalo.
Yeah.
So there's some
Snyder does like his strangeness sometimes.
There's some weirdness in here. There's also what looks like one of those rolling cities like that terrible movie Mortal Engines.
Yes.
We
can't say that it's terrible because I don't think any of us have seen it.
I can assume.
But one can assume.
Just like how Martin Scorsese assumed that all Marvel movies are bad.
Yep. Yes.
Randy and Martin Scorsese are the same.
We're just like that, except my particular movie is movies in which cities roll around on drugs. Anyway, the art on this is really good. It reminds me...
Yeah, I was flipping through it. It's really nice.
This reminds me a little bit of East of West, filtered through the sensibilities of, like, DMZ or... what was the other thing I called it, Nick? There was something else I said that it reminded me of. But it's this weird sort of political science fiction world-buildy thing. I don't know if I'm going to stick with it. It's one of those big high-concept things.
Yeah. True, We Stand on Guard.
That was Steve Scroach.
Yeah, just upside down, it looked a little bit like him.
Yeah, I can see that.
But and also maybe reminded me of the world-building stuff that went on in
but
that.
But Snyder and Soule, they put a lot into this.
I mean, they
there's
did.
Tons of world-building.
Yep.
There's some cool back matter stuff in there,
I like their characters. I like all the designs. I'm curious to see where it goes. It's either going to become a really interesting sort of alternate world science fiction story or utter nonsense.
I hadn't noticed on this big splash page where you see the carnivorous bison, there's a weird land shark that they're riding.
Yeah, there's a land shark. there's all kinds of crazy. There's what looks like a land piranha.
Yep.
Maybe a velociraptor that's purple. It's very strange. There's been some weird mutations or something.
The United States has gone in a weird direction.
Somebody put acid in the water supply or something.
Yes.
Anyway, it was an interesting read. I'll be curious to see where it goes from here. Also on my list this week, Crone number 1, which is basically Old Woman Red Sonja.
Yep.
New story of Daredevil, or it's the middle of a story of Daredevil, where they've been doing some really interesting things. Daredevil has gone back to train with Electro because he's lost his edge. That's been a lot of fun. Immortal Hulk 26 returns back to its story after a sort of a weird cosmic departure for number 25. 26 returns to Banner's now in charge of Shadow Base, and he is doing basically idealistic domestic terrorism.
Is it back to something that you like? Because I know the last time,
I did not like 25 at all. It was a weird change. This is back to what it was.
Okay, yeah, I was flipping through it. 25 had a whole lot of stuff told from like a bizarre alien perspective.
Yeah.
That was like, it was very inscrutable.
Yeah. No, it's back to being what it was, which is good.
Once again, it is scrutable.
It is scrutable. Die number 9 is a lot of world-building stuff with the Bronte sisters.
Yep.
Which is weird. Ghost Rider number 2 comes out, and it's, I'm liking what they're doing with that so far. Savage Avengers number 7 features Elektra and Conan and Dr. Voodoo and Dr. Strange and a Conan team-up that I was not expecting to see, but I really enjoyed. Amazing Spider-Man number 33 starts off the 2099 books as Spider-Man 2099 comes back. And that's all I got. Dave, what else on your stack?
Let's see. Boom Studios put out one of their Boombox kind of like all ages ones that I liked quite a bit called BB Free.
Okay,
this is really beautifully written or beautifully drawn kind of all ages apocalyptic story.
Okay.
About a girl who's I feel like it's very much sort of Moana's structure. She's a girl stifling under her family's kind of desire to kind of stay where they are in this Florida swamp and this kind of it's a strange world where it sounds like at some point the apocalypse was the Earth literally killing off like the one percenters.
Okay.
Like it, like they called it like the plague of the of what do they call it, the plague on greed or something like that. So it's a slightly, it's a surreal kind of thing, but the world is still kind of was devastated by it. But she's a girl who's just turned 15, and there seems to be a tradition in their world that, like, when you're 15, you're an adult, and you can kind of go out and go your own way, and her dad is trying to keep her under his thumb. And there's some other subplots going on, and she's also running a pirate radio station with a friend for people and for the other kids out there. So it is an interesting bit of world building. Really, like, I really, really like the art. I don't know how to, I can't even quite think of how to describe this. It actually has some elements in common with manga. But like really kind of interesting, an interesting color palette that's kind of energetic without being realistic.
It kind of reminds me in some places of like Cliff Chang's color a little bit. It's got some of that, like a little bit of Brandon Graham, a little
yeah,
bit of
yeah. Brandon Graham is maybe the one of the closer ones I could think of, and not quite as realistic, but it also did remind me a little bit of the what was the one that became Heavy Vinyl or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That one, which was also from Boombox.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's a one-shot Addams Family comic from IDW. So if you're looking for that for some Addams Family stuff,
you want to check based it on the cartoon designs.
Yeah, from the new one. Fourth and final issue of, at least for now, of Jeff Lemire's Berserker Unbound, his story of a barbarian who kind of time slips into the present and forms an unusual bond with a homeless guy. This is a very light overall miniseries. I feel like very little overall happened, but I still enjoyed it, and I kind of recommend it. It had an ending that was satisfying, where these guys who can barely speak each other's language, mostly they don't, and they keep calling each other buddy because that was one of the words, like, it's like they don't even know if that's, like, I think he called him buddy at some point, and the guy assumed that that was his name. So it's like Conan keeps calling him buddy, and he's like, okay, buddy, and they're like, all right, buddy. But this is the issue where, like, the evil sort of sorcerer sends all his war band through the portal after him. And they sort of have to make their stand, and this homeless guy that's become his friend is... both in some ways not prepared for this at all. He's not a fighter or anything like that. But in some unexpected ways, he is very prepared for it. And it was kind of a cool conclusion. I sort of hope he does some more with it, even though it's by no means one of his, you know, deeper efforts. Let's see. Baldur's Gate, or D&D, the Baldur's Gate line of comics that they've been doing, gets a 100-page special that is really a sampler of sort of several issues. So if you just kind of want to see what's going on in these Baldur's Gate comics, check this out. It has like first issues, I think, of several different miniseries. And it also has the giant miniature giant space hamster Boo on the cover with the admonition, go for the eyes, his deadliest attack.
That should be this would be a motivational poster is what that should be.
it really should. Like, I don't know. I don't see why you couldn't print it as such. And I did not get around to giving this the full read, but Brian Bendis has his Legion of Superheroes book out this week.
Really nice art by Ryan Suk.
I was going to say, yeah, I flipped through it and the art is beautiful.
Yep. Nick, I think that's everything for me. What you got?
Like I said, 2 X-Books this week. New Mutants was the other one. If you're fans of these characters, I would give it a shot. It's sort of a finding their place in Krakoa.
You know, I thought it was interesting. I just read a few pages of it.
Yeah.
And Rain, a.k.a. Wolfsbane, who had been killed, I guess, at some point.
Yep, in the most horrible way possible.
Okay. she gets resurrected in one of their little Krakoa pod things. And I thought that was kind of clever because A, she's one of those characters a little bit the heart of one, sometimes the heart of the New Mutants.
Yeah.
Certainly the one of the more innocent members. And so she's back and they kind of fill her in on here's what's going on. Not like heavy-handed exposition, but they're you know, if you kind of don't know all the stuff that's going on or you just need a catch up, that's a pretty clever way to do it is through the eyes of a resurrected character.
Yep.
And basically them, you know, just enjoying each other's company. Realizing they're missing a member,
yep.
Trying to go find that member, and running across the Starjammers, which I love the Starjammers, so it's fun to see.
It's
going to
be like
there.
A sci-fi-ish type thing.
Yep, it's definitely sci-fi.
It also has really nice painted artwork.
Yeah, Rod Reiss does some amazing work in there. Lois Lane number 5, Greg Rucka continues to tell the tale of Lois Lane, badass reporter, while doing kind of a... sub-story about Renee Montoya being a badass investigator.
Is Lois smoking yet?
Lois has smoked, yes.
Okay, so she's smoking and drinking. Okay, got it.
Yep. So
is she vaping yet?
She is not vaping, thank God. I'd rather...
not like Mr. Gordon.
We get it, Lois, you vape.
No, she smokes.
Okay.
And then Batman number 82, which we're coming up on the end of Tom King's run at this point. I think it's, what, 84 is the last issue? I think of his run.
I thought it was 85,
or maybe it might be 85. But we're coming up on it. This is a big issue that pits like of a little literal fight between Batman and Bane. So a bare knuckle brawl, I will say.
Did Batman just show up and he's like, "Hey, you want to fight?"
Kind of, sort of. Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
All right, that's comics for the week. We've got a little time left, so we're going to talk Watchmen. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, you guys ready to talk Watchmen again?
Weirdly enough, yes, because this
hour
is...
three start.
Yes, I have talked more about this show than I have like I guess at the levels that I think people were talking about Game of Thrones in the final season before they knew it was going to crush all their hearts.
But I think I feel giddy on Sundays because I look forward to it.
Yep. But before we talk Watchmen, because we're going to have a spoiler warning.
Yes.
Let's real quick go over a couple other things that Nick and I have watched.
Yep.
Modern Love on Amazon Prime.
Go watch this.
It's the best thing Amazon Prime's done, like by a wide margin.
I would agree with that.
Because
actually,
the only thing that's anywhere near this caliber is Fleabag, which is not actually theirs. It's BBC.
What about Marvelous Mrs. Maisel? I haven't watched that.
It's really good. This is better.
Is it, and why would I like it?
So it's an anthology series based off the New York Times Modern Love column.
Okay.
So it's based on real like romance stories.
And they went all out on casting.
Star-studded. It has got Anne Hathaway in an episode. It's got...
Tina Fey, John Slattery.
I mean, it's from the perspective of the person who's, like, the advice giver?
No, it's based on these
stories. No, they're just little vignette stories.
So like, how long?
Each episode is not like 45 minutes?
Yeah, 45 minutes.
An hour?
Okay.
So each episode is a story of a particular... Not necessarily love affair. Some of them aren't, but, like...
Right. So, wait, people write in and they sort of do a confessional...
Well, this
or are they asking a question?
It's dramatized.
It's a new story.
Oh, right. But I'm saying that what they took it from, are those people writing in like you would to an advice columnist?
I think so.
Or are they writing in to say, here is my experience with love?
I think it was that. I think it was the latter part.
Right. Like I had this relationship that had some ups and downs, and now we've been together 20 years, or we got divorced, or whatever.
But I had heard about it.
Okay, so I'm looking at Modern Love, because I didn't actually think to look at what the column was like.
Okay.
What is Modern Love? I found a thing in New York Times. See if I have enough free stories to read it. it's a column. I don't know what it is. It's taking forever to load. Never mind. It's loading the trailer. Anyway.
We're going to go with there was a column
it was
about
a column.
Love.
We don't really know the column.
But they don't use that to like bookend or to frame the show?
No.
All you need to know is that it's in the credits. It says this is based on the column Modern Love.
Yeah, got it.
We don't know if these are real stories or not. They could be. But each episode is a story of... some kind of love. The first one is Kristen Milioti, the mother from How I Met Your Mother.
Yep.
Playing a woman who gets pregnant in sort of a one night stand kind of thing, and decides to have the baby, and she has this domineering doorman named Guzman.
Yeah, it's more about the relationship that they share.
Yeah, it's about, and at first it seems kind of creepy, like he judges her dates.
Think of a overbearing German sniper.
Yeah.
That is essentially what this guy is.
Who has appointed himself her father figure.
Weird.
And she seems to go along with it. And it seems a little weird. And then as it goes more along, you see it turns kind of sweet.
Yeah, and there's a reason why he's acting the way he is, and it's not, like, nefarious or anything like that. It's all these are told with kind of a delicate touch. Hmm, they're very human, and I think that's the best quality.
They're all tearjerkers. They will all make you cry to some extent.
The one that got me the most was Anne Hathaway's.
Anne Hathaway's is brutal. It's about mental illness, and it's super good.
It's mental illness, depression, and it. But it's
sounds like the show is structured such that it could encompass almost any kind of story.
Yeah, it's not just.
But there's an overall quality of writing to all of them.
Oh, very much so.
There's a first date that ends with a trip to the ER that's really good. There's a empty nester couple that is like maybe falling apart and trying to rekindle their relationship.
Like after their kids leave.
That I thought was strong. With I would never have paired Tina Fey with John Slattery.
They're great together.
They're great.
And there's a, I don't want to spoil it, but there's a thing in the final episode that just kind of really brought everything together in an impressive, powerful way.
That sounds impressive.
It's one of the best things I've watched on TV this year, and I watch a lot of TV.
I think I was very happy and surprised with the fact that it wasn't about just relationships.
Yeah,
it was.
There's not necessarily like a marriage or anything at the end of any of it.
No, it wasn't, and it wasn't strictly about.
I mean, it's not
two
like strictly
people,
about romantic relationships.
Right.
That it's about
it
sometimes
be,
friendships or
it could
romantic-y
be about a different,
friendships.
Love is
or
interpreted.
Right.
Okay.
There is dating and love in all of them. But the what the love at the center of is not always romantic love.
Interesting. That's pretty cool. That sounds like a very thoughtfully conceived and executed show.
There's also, Dave, there's one of the stories. I don't know, have you read Dan Savage's book about the baby, the one where they adopted the baby?
I didn't read that one. I read one of his other ones.
So there's a story that he wrote. It was about him and Terry who adopting a baby. The baby came from like a street kid. And it's such the story of one of those episodes.
Yep.
I almost wonder if it was adapted from it. Like,
oh, interesting.
If it's actually Dan Savage's story, because it felt like it. But it's really great.
That was the story that one of the guys was Moriarty from Sherlock.
Yeah.
And he's amazing.
And he's
not
a priest in Fleabag.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
You should watch Fleabag.
I should. I've heard nothing but good things.
But yeah, this was a phenomenal show. I did not. Amazon Prime has had a tendency of letting me down, no matter how good the cast is. But they seem to finally be getting it, because Modern Love was really, really good.
Yeah. It's got a few shows that I really enjoy.
I was less impressed, but still interested in Daybreak over on Netflix.
I saw the trailer, and I was like, okay, that might be really bad, or it could be very stupid.
It's bad and it's stupid, but it's also kind of fun.
The Apocalypse by Way of Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, that's the easy pitch. In fact... Matthew Broderick plays the principal of the school. A bomb goes off. It's some kind of germ warfare nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
Kills off most
most
adults.
Of the adults turn into what they call ghoulies.
Yeah.
They speak out loud the last stupid thought they had in their head.
Yes.
So one of them is like, they're zombies. They try and eat you. But one of them is like, what's she saying? Like, there's a sale on yoga pants.
Right.
Like that. And the kids are all sort of, they all go kind of road warrior, like the jocks become a sort of road warrior colony.
Yeah.
The cheerleaders form what they call the cheermazons. There's the STEM guys.
That actually sounds kind of fun.
It is. It's a
and
fun
it,
idea.
And it so it's like high school cliques in an apocalyptic setting.
Yes.
Kind of stuff.
And it focuses on one character named Josh.
Who's like a C student.
Yeah, he's kind of just a background guy at school that people barely notice.
Yeah.
And about him trying to find his girlfriend in the apocalypse.
Half hour?
No, it's
a little longer.
It's 45 minutes. It's the Netflix.
I think the trouble I have with it is the tone is off. Like, it sometimes wants to be heartfelt and serious, and sometimes it can be goofy and light. It doesn't quite hit either one properly.
I agree. There's some pacing issues as well.
Yeah.
However, their supporting cast
The two adults in the cast are great.
The adults are great, and I actually think the younger character is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I like his friend. Well, I say friend in quotation marks, but the Ronan, essentially.
He's good. Yeah, there's some good stuff in here. It's also, it's not the most consistent world building you've ever seen. You got to go in knowing this is kind of dumb. And I was hoping for a little bit more of the Ferris Bueller, you know, there's the fourth wall breaking. They changed narrators a few times, but it never quite clicked.
Mm.
But it clicked enough that I couldn't stop watching it.
Yeah.
And I didn't finish it out.
It was what, 8 episodes?
Yeah, it's 8 or 10. It's pretty quick. It's actually 10.
Is it 10?
Yeah.
All right.
Amazon does 8, Netflix does 10.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. We're going to give a spoiler warning. If you have not caught up with Watchmen episode 3, you should not listen to this. You should go and watch it, and then just listen to us. and maybe also to my friend's podcast, Two Pods the Watchmen, which does a weekly breakdown, and the official HBO podcast where Damon Lindelof is being interviewed by the showrunner of Chernobyl.
By Chad Mazin.
Yeah. So, this week's episode is called She Was Killed by Space Junk.
Do we know what that's from?
It's yes. a line from
It's a
Devo.
Line from the Devo song.
Oh, interesting. And that is an indicator. This is one of their more focused episodes because it's all Laurie-centric. Laurie, a.k.a. Silk Spectre
and listened,
2.
And Laurie listened to Devo in the
Right, in and the that comic. Was one of the things. Yeah, Dan was the kind of stodgy dude who's like, well, mostly I listen to classical music or whatever. And she's like, oh, my God. anyway, so yeah, I guess the title, and there's actually, literally, she's like, Alexa, play Devo when she gets home.
Yeah.
No, here's the weird thing. The thing she's playing is a CD player. And it's voice controlled, but there doesn't seem to be like digital music in this world.
Right. We know that their technology evolved weirdly because Dr. Manhattan moved forward a lot of technology in his early decades.
Yep.
And then when the cancer scare got out there that was Ozymandias' smear campaign,
people got
backed away from technology, it seems like. So like it seems like almost for a decade or two, people have been kind of pulled back. But yes, it's almost like sometimes there's versions of what we have in the real world.
Yeah.
So like a CD player, but yeah, voice activated.
Yeah. Well, there may not be internet in this world.
Right.
Correct. No cell phones.
Laurie is a different person than how we last saw her. Last we saw her at the end of Watchmen in like 1986 or 87. I forget what year
she
it was
and Dan
when it ended.
Had changed their names and were kind of riding off into the sunset.
Yeah, sort of having survived Ozymandias' thing and having to live with whatever they were going to about having known that he killed 3 million people to try and save the world, and it sort of worked. That's how it ended. But they were gonna like try and build their life together. Well, they are not together.
Life finds a way. Falling apart.
Yes, that is the theme of Watchmen.
Yes,
she's an FBI agent.
Yeah,
who specifically works on an anti-vigilante task force.
We're introduced her to her cleverly in
Well, she does a bank holdup at the beginning, and you don't even know what's happening. And, like, a vigilante shows up, sort of a Batman-ish vigilante who's going to stop her, only for her to, like, drop the gun, or, like, for her to, like, point the gun at him, and the other robbers or whatever,
like,
are all revealed to be FBI agents.
Wouldn't it be smart if if the FBI maybe tipped you off?
And you showed up to be captured? Yeah, so she's basically set up, staged this robbery to lure in a vigilante to capture him. And, she is kind of hard-boiled.
Yeah.
She's smart-ass.
Glib.
She's glib, yeah.
Maybe not too far from what her father is like at times.
Right. Not cruel.
No, not
like
cruel.
He was, but she can be, I don't know if I want to quite say a bitch.
I mean, she does shoot him like 3 times in the back and not really caring.
That is to say, the guy who was the vigilante.
Yeah.
And then, like, they're pointedly somebody else who's like, wow, how did you know that, you know, shooting, that, you know, wouldn't go through his armor? And she just walks off.
Yeah.
She's got a little world weariness to her, which is very different from the world weariness the character had in the comic, where she'd been sort of abused at the hands of various men.
Yeah.
Right.
But she was still, like, she wasn't this sort of tough.
She was rather a little more optimistic, and now she's definitely somewhat closer to her mother in ways.
Yeah,
and her father.
Jean Smart plays her. I loved this character. I thought they did such a good job with her.
I just realized this, but if you lived with the fact that you know how like 3 million people were killed,
the weight of that is gonna
screw you up.
Yeah.
Yep. And like among the many things that occur in this episode, I think sort of two things. If you haven't read the behind the scenes materials, which is on HBO's website, which seem to be like really, Nick, you noticed them, and I do think they are pretty key world building stuff.
Well, they're the text pieces from the actual comic.
They work just the same, and each episode has like three text pieces.
Yeah, 3 to 4.
Yeah, so you should check it out. You knew from that what is up with Night Owl in this future.
Yeah.
But if you didn't know, this episode as much as indicates what the deal is, because Senator Keene?
Yep, Senator Keene.
He wants her to go and investigate
Judd's murder.
Judd's murder in Tulsa. And she knows that he's angling for presidential... the presidency.
Yeah.
And he's like, he knows, she knows, and he says, because she doesn't want to do this, And he says, you know, the president can pardon anybody he wants, no maybe, questions asked.
Maybe get your owl out of your out of the cage.
Yeah, so apparently Night Owl, with more detail to be found online, is in prison. Presumably the vigilantism stuff with him and Laurie after the end of Watchmen didn't go so well.
They, I guess, took up the new mantles at some point and then got caught.
Yep. Yep. And we don't know if also if there's like, is she, did she, do you think, is she guilty from that? If nothing else, she was a co-superhero with him.
Correct. Yeah. Something happened.
And she didn't go to jail.
Right. Something happened.
She made
there.
Some kind of deal.
Right. And that deal may have been, you come work for us. Yeah. And you know, on superheroes. Anyway, she's a pretty hard-ass person in it. Please. And you get to see her very interestingly run up against a variety of characters. So maybe most notably...
Sister Knight.
Well, so, and that's actually, I was going to say, the mirror...
Looking Glass.
Looking Glass. But Sister Knight, they also have a great confrontation, because Sister Knight, there's a tense confrontation with them in the end.
Sister Knight is
the only person in, like, the whole show...
Not intimidated at all.
Well, it was kind of funny, because Looking Glass is kind of like... He's like, without saying, he's like, you're just trolling me, ain't you? Basically, yeah. That was the vibe I got.
Well, I don't know if we said who played it. Jean Smart plays Laurie.
Yep.
And she's amazing. However, the last time she was on a show was Legion. Is she sort of playing kind of that same kind of character?
Similar, but this is more of a hard-edge character.
Okay.
Way back in the day, I forget what the deal was with her character, but she was one of the leads on Designing Women.
Yep.
She was the blonde lady, so if you ever saw Designing Women, that's who she was.
And I also feel like she might have been Frasier's final love interest.
Interesting.
One is his big love interest on his show.
But this is a new turn for her, and she is a badass.
Yeah, she's great, and she's most of the show. However, we also get confirmation about Vite.
Yes.
We get confirmation that's him, or at least he thinks he's him.
Right. I'm not really taking anything much for granted here. Yeah. At face value.
I'm going on record. I think this is Vite.
Well,
he's a clone.
The theory that I have as to who is imprisoning him, although I kind of like the theory that it's a Manhattan thing, but we came up with a kind of bonkers theory. Do we want to say the bonkers theory?
I would like to put out my bonkers... All my theories have been wrong so far.
So, Randy, why don't you put out your bonkers theory, okay. And then Dave and I will...
My bonkers theory is that all the Vite stuff is flashbacks, and that when they opened by showing...
The very first episode,
when they opened by showing Dr. Manhattan destroying that castle on the Mars, that is the castle where Vite has been staying for 7 years or however long since he's been dead.
Yep.
11 years, I guess.
Yeah.
And that he wasn't dead, that Manhattan had basically imprisoned him in there... And that he eventually finds a way to escape, and Manhattan destroys the castle because he's gone.
Right. And the weakness in your crazy plan is, like, motivation. Like, Manhattan is generally not a guy who would keep people prisoner.
Yeah.
He's generally, like, I'm so above humanity, he wouldn't do a villainous thing like that.
He's not vindictive, he's not...
Right.
But that said, a story reason could come up. He even at the end of Watchmen, after having abdicated humanity, he kind of rediscovered it through Laurie.
Yeah.
So... yes, something could have happened.
So our bonkers theory, however...
Our bonkers theory involves the character Max Shea. You may remember him as a character glimpsed only in the background of Watchmen, yep. But who was the writer of Tales of the Black Freighter, I believe.
I think that's correct, yes.
A.K.A. the kind of the Alan Moore of pirate comics,
yep.
In those days. The psychologically introspective, darkly, you know, dark-minded writer of that. And... what we know is in the comic, he was working... He was one of the many people hired by Adrian Vite to enact his scheme and actually construct the giant squid alien thing.
Was it his wife?
I think it was a woman he met while they were working on it, and they fell in love.
Yeah.
And I believe she was a visual artist of some sort, and he was the writer... And, you know, like that squid thing, when he beamed it, when it teleported out, it did like a psychic flash, which is, I think, what really killed the 3 million people. It's not like it tentacle whipped everybody.
No.
like a displacer beast would.
Exactly.
Anyway, so, like, that was what Max Shea may have done. And what Vite did is, like, once he had gotten everything, the alien was done, he poisoned all those people and killed them. Or at least so it looked in the comic. Our crazy theory is that Shay lived, and maybe his wife as well. At least part of this theory
because
works.
Because they were supposed to be very smart people. Like,
right.
And there's something very Lindelofian about him using an Alan Moore stand-in character.
Right, because...
As a, like, the manipulator of all this stuff. Well, it's a little meta, and it feels like...
Well, also, we... You know, nothing is in here just willy-nilly. They didn't. So when you see the Black Freighter flag,
right? The Black Freighter flag is on the border of wherever crazy, whatever crazy place Adrian Veidt is.
It's basically his. So yeah, it's the, where
what
he
do they call him? The
pass.
Warden.
The game warden.
The game
so
warden.
I have two theories. One of these is a supporting point. One of these is a not supporting point.
Right, hold on to it for just a second.
Okay. And then
right.
also the
so
wax.
So the big thing is yes, Tales from the Black Freighter is Shay's creation, so it makes sense to have the Black Freighter flag up there. Just clarifying that.
Yeah.
And are you talking about the other thing about the
well, there's also
Veidt Industries?
Well, there's that possible. There, we know that somebody, a woman bought, basically took over Veidt Industries. And
right.
This is
sort of a very tangential thing, but I did wonder if it could be the woman that Max Shea had fallen in love with. I seem to remember she was an Indian woman in there, but I haven't read Watchmen in long enough that I remember. But if she is a visual artist and she like maybe you know like sold some of her pieces for millions or something like that, she could have had the money to do
and
it.
And going back to the flag for just briefly, that's not the only thing that's sort of Black Freighter. A message is delivered by letter to Adrian Veidt, and it has basically the Black Freighter logo in wax on the paper.
Oh, right.
On the envelope.
So, one point about that.
Yes.
The motel that Laurie Blake and Petey are staying at is the Black Freighter Motel.
Yes.
Okay.
I caught that.
So, it may just be that they're being cute with the references, or that Black Freighter is such a huge phenomenon in this world that there is hotels named after it and that there's flags and that kind of stuff.
That's possible.
But the other thing, what's his name?
Max Shea, I think.
He would have a reason to be pissed at Ozymandias and to imprison him.
Right, yeah, I didn't quite get around to the motivation. Like, yes, they would. They might, and yet they are also conspirators. Although there's, we never really knew how much they knew about what the big plan was.
But ultimately, they would probably find themselves to be culpable, like
right.
themselves.
Right, and they may have thought, like they may have essentially imprisoned him, and they would, by the way, potentially have access to some of the technology he used in there, which is like teleportation technology.
Cloning technology.
I don't know if they had clones per se, but they created this this creature that was like, if not alive, was close to that.
Yeah.
So some of the weird stuff, like the clones that you see in Adrian's world, could be like of their creation. Sort of a, we're gonna like isolate this guy who seems to me senile.
Well, remind me again in the Watchmen comic, Veidt has like a trio of sort of like servants, right? Aren't they supposed to be clones?
Gosh, that might be the case. I can't remember.
They gotta be clones. They're two
in the comic.
He's talking about the comic.
Veidt is shown to have like three manservants.
And he killed everybody to cover it up.
Yeah. And I think they were supposed to be clones.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I think cloning technology exists, and if Veidt had access to it, they now own Veidt Industries, which they can clone whatever the hell they want now.
Right, and they could be keeping him in this strange little wonderland of his own imagining.
I don't know if this is actually going to come to pass. I really like the theory.
Right. I think even if it does, it may come to pass in a way we haven't anticipated.
Right.
Like, Dr. Manhattan may have some role in this because all the surreal recreation of his life and his origin through weird theater that kills off clones.
It's true.
It still clearly has some link to it. So it is hard to guess. It is a little inscrutable at times.
Yeah.
But we're putting it out there. If we are correct, you need to pay us $50,000.
Yes, that is correct. That is actually accurate.
I mean, that much at least is written in stone.
Yeah.
I'm having more fun dissecting the show than I have any other show in quite some time.
Well, it's interesting because there's both plot stuff to dissect and there's morality to dissect.
Yeah.
And then
there's
just like, how does it tie into the original Watchmen stuff?
Yeah.
Right.
It's also just a good show. Like, even if Watchmen wasn't involved at all in this, the show itself, the characters would be really good. Like, it's a really good show. I'm enjoying it. It's probably my favorite thing on TV right now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I'm still, to some degree, making up my mind on it because a little bit like Lost, I kind of need to see something of what the end game is before I can look back at it in full.
But David, it is your favorite show on TV right now. What else are you watching?
I'm not watching anything else regularly.
So by default.
What if I have no favorite?
It's not allowed.
But I will say that this is nine episodes.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was 10. Is it not 10?
I thought it was 9.
Okay.
I'm occasionally catching an episode of Titans. You don't know. That could be my favorite.
No, it can't. Not a Watchmen, no.
So where Lost had 6-7 seasons?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did some weird half season.
Leftovers had 3. Yeah.
This one, I mean, if this does well, we'll get more Watchmen, I'm sure.
It's possible, yeah.
But Lindelof's company line is that it's planned as a single season.
Yes.
Which surprised me. I thought it was going to be planned as like two or three seasons.
So I have a feeling with a shorter, you know, episode count, I think you have to be a little more strategic in planning and know where you're going. You can't really run off the rails.
It feels, even though it's very cryptic at times, it feels very controlled. Like, I do feel like every scene is pregnant with visual information, and if I went through and still framed, I could find a lot of stuff, but I'm not quite that insane. But like,
why are you looking at me like that? I didn't do that.
Well, the internet's that insane.
They did a pan across, I think, the crowded, like, workroom or whatever of Adrian Invite, mm-hmm. and I was like, I felt like I saw stuff like throughout there, symbols and things like that that probably had meaning.
I watched the second time.
I think that hiding behind those cows had like meaning.
I'm sure.
And I don't know if it ties into that painting that we later see or what.
I think that painting has a lot of symbolism.
This painting symbolism is discussed in one of the text pieces on HBO's site.
PDPedia, which apparently I need to read.
That's like spelled PETEYPEDIA.
It's full of interesting stuff about the world of Watchmen and where it is now.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm really enjoying diving into this thing again.
Yeah.
It makes me want to reread the book, too.
For sure. I kind of want to see especially about the creation of the squid creature right now, but also pay attention to, like, Dr. Manhattan's technology involvement and, like, how that would affect people if they thought that anything he had helped with could give them cancer.
Yeah.
And I want to know who's helping Louis Gossett Jr.
we thought that it might be a protege of Night Owl, even though he's in prison, that he could be manipulating things because it does seem like he's built gear for maybe for the police, maybe somewhat under duress.
Could be a completely new character
and
that we haven't even...
Since he himself, though, is a legacy character, he's Night Owl 2.
Yeah.
It does seem to be interesting if he had a follow-up, if there was a Night Owl 3 out there.
Yeah.
All right. For it.
Well, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more Watchmen and other stuff. Until that time.
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.